Hello and welcome back to Humans of Speedway. And in this episode that's coming up, another chance to hear the Speedway paradise, the dream meeting of Shane Parker. Before we get to that, though, just want to say thank you to everybody who listened to the previous two episodes that we released, the new ones, because they've had such a massive reaction, completely dwarfs anything else that that I've done. And I want to say thank you to everybody who has listened and told their friends as well, which is really the main thing you can do to spread the word of Speedway more than any advertising campaign, more than anything else, is just tell your friends. If you know friends who are Speedway fans, check out the podcast, spread the word. That is the best thing that you can do. And it'd be amazing. And thanks to everybody who's done that in the past, and hit subscribe. And if you leave us a review too, we're going to start giving a little bit of a big up in each episode to somebody who leaves a review. So you could have your fame around the Speedway world, which would be very, very good. As I make this episode, currently we're number four in the UK Apple Podcast Sports News Charts, which is slightly ridiculous, but obviously it's great that there's a lot of people in the UK in particular, and other countries as well. Hong Kong, we're massive in Hong Kong. So thank you to everybody who's downloaded and listened, and make sure you stick with us into 2021, because there is some major stuff on the way, a few exciting changes, but if you subscribe, you get all the info as and when it all occurs, and we can let you know what's happening. Right now, onto this episode then. This was one that I did in July this year. Think back to the summer. Hooked up with Shane Parker. He's back in Adelaide now, but a legend of British Speedway, rode for Ipswich, King's Lynn, Glasgow, Peterborough, and finished his career at Sheffield. And he's got some amazing stories. If you've not listened to the Shane Parker episode yet, then please do, because it's one of my favourites, actually, because he's just got so many great stories. Well known as being an entertainer, bit of a loose cannon in the world of Speedway. Naked Hot Laps was one of his things. Hear all about those stories, and also the amazing story of how he, as he finished his career at Sheffield, he discovered his biological father, which had so many quirks of fate involving Glasgow and Australia that it is really weird. Really weird. But you can hear that story in the full episode, episode 6, if you scroll down. But right now, we're going to get to his Speedway paradise, which is Shane Parker's dream meeting. Simple prospect. We do this with every guest that we have on, and ask them to come up with their dream meeting. And the questions are, what would be the track that you'd be racing on? Which stadium would that track be in? Your dream 1-7? A rule you would change, who would be the referee, and the opposition as well, which has to be a solid actual team that existed to be the opposition, the ultimate team. So all that and more on the way as we hear the Speedway paradise of Shane Parker. And as always, the first question on the Speedway paradise feature is, which track would his dream meeting be raced on? Based on purely the shape and the shale and the preparation of the track, nothing to do with the stadium, just purely the track, where would it be held?
I'm a bit undecided. I have two here, King's Lynn and Birmingham. Now, okay. Buster Chapman was doing the track at King's Lynn. Huggy originally at King's Lynn, and he used to prepare it so grippy and so drivey. I absolutely loved it. And Birmingham, Alan Bridget was doing the track there. It was when it first reopened again. And it was very similar dirt and very tacky and grippy again. So they're probably my two favourite tracks. I was never, ever fond of any slick tracks. I hated slick ones and loved the grippy ones.
Like going fast.
Yeah, well, it was a case of being a bad gator. I could never make starts real good. And at least when I missed the start on a grippy track, I had the opportunity to pass riders, and I was a racer. I was never a gator.
I suppose you got to be at least one or the other, haven't you?
Yeah, well, true. You know, I think a lot of the Danes are very good on the slick tracks. I don't know why it is, possibly because they grow up on slick tracks and that's how they learn to ride. So back here in Australia, when I was growing up, we used to race on car tracks with concrete fences, and they were always grippy. So yeah, I guess it's just what I grew up with.
That sounds really romantic, a kart track with a concrete fence.
Yeah. Well,
fully compliant with health and safety.
Yeah, there was no such thing as health and safety growing up over here in Speedway. It was, unfortunately, we don't race on them tracks now, but fortunately, we don't either. It's sort of catch 22 there, because there's not many tracks we can ride on over here now that are sold bike tracks. And it's a lack of opportunity, but on the other hand, it was pretty dangerous, and you didn't want to make any mistakes with them concrete fences, that's for sure. But all the Aussies grew up doing that. It was just as what we knew. I mean, riders probably rode within themselves, I think, back then, whereas nowadays with an air fence, you can see that riders just put so much on the line, and they kind of know there's a safety fence there, but geez, it's they put so much more on the line now with the air fences than they used to before them air fences.
Air fences, obviously, I know that Chris Holder had a really bad crash, didn't he, when he slipped underneath one, but have they really then, as you're saying there, softened up or increased the risks, I suppose, or riders taking extra risks knowing that there is that safety net?
I think the riders take extra risk knowing there's a safety net there. I think some of the air fences are good, and then there's some cheaper ones that aren't as good. I think they can be, the air fences aren't the be all and end all. I think they can be improved on. And I don't think they've been improved on for quite a few years. It would be good to see a bit more improvement on them. I don't know if riders are still having the problem with bikes hitting the fences and lifting up air fences and riders going under them. But back when I was racing, that was a big problem. Claimed a couple of really good riders some nasty injuries. So, it's an added bonus, but you can build on that, and you can't just sort of say, well, you know, we've got air fences now and that's enough. You know, they can make them better and improve.
And moving on then to the stadium that you'd put your ideal track, which is a merge together of Kings Lynn and Birmingham.
It's a no-brainer. So, it's got to be Wembley.
Yes. The old Wembley.
Yep, 100%. Twin Towers.
1981?
Yeah.
Okay, let's get on to your all-time team then. I think this is the bit that everybody looks forward to the most. Who would be in your all-time 1-7? Over to you.
I've got Bruce Penhall.
It is 1981 at Wembley.
Sorry, he won it. He did, yes. And he was one of the older professionals, I think. I sort of always looked up to Bruce and admired him. The two Morans as one rider, Sean and Kelly put into one rider. Imagine that.
Wow, so you're sort of turning into a Speedway Frankenstein.
Yes, yes. I mean, both of them were a talent. So I think if you could combine both Morans, that would be a phenomenal rider. The next two I've picked are down to my experience with team riding with them and being great team riders. Firstly, that's Chris Louie, who I mentioned earlier. And secondly, my Glasgow days, as we went through a load of 5-1s with me and James Greaves. So Greavesy's one of them. And the next one's a really good mate of mine and a superb grass track long tracker is Joe Screen. Mr. Entertainer, if anybody is he's definitely one of them.
And he likes a wheelie.
Yeah, loves a wheelie, and there's not too many people you can see go around the whole lap on the back wheel, so that's something I've never been able to do, and I love me wheelies, so nice Greeny will be there with us. And one other rider who's unfortunately got injured in the sport in 1990, and that's Eric Gunderson, some guy that unfortunately didn't fulfill his full potential, so I'd love to see him there. And the final, last but not least, is a superb Australian back in the day, is Jack Young. There's my pick.
Some interesting picks there, because, you know, it's not like going for the obvious world champions and so on, like James Greaves. And
No, good team riders and, so, you know, people yeah. I remember as back in the day. Yeah, that's my favourite seven.
So when I was growing up, I was a Bradford fan, a Halifax fan, and... obviously, that's where Eric got injured, and I wasn't at that meeting, but I do remember seeing Eric ride round that track, and he was just unbeatable. Him and Hans Nielsen were always kind of, you knew when they arrived with their respective teams that it was going to be a tough night.
Yeah, yeah, and Bradford was such a great track to watch him ride at too, you know. I think it was actually, might have been 89 Eric crashed, not 90. The world final was there in 90 and Bradford won it. So
that's right. That was Per Jonsson won that.
Yes. Yeah, correct. And Todd Wiltshire was third. But yeah, well, that was my first year in the UK and my first world final I'd ever seen. And gee, what a world final it was. It memories there. Definitely. It was Todd Wiltshire's first world final too. And to finish third was a super effort. That's another rider I look up to a lot. Reason being, I look up to Todd Wiltshire. He was the immaculate starter. If anybody could gate, it was Todd.
And there's talk of Bradford coming back, by the way, as well. That's
I seen a couple of photos of Bradford a while back, and it looked like the track. They built a big club rooms or something over the third and fourth corner, and I thought, oh, there's no hope of Bradford returning. But that's good news if it is. Let's hope so.
Yeah, they reckon they can still ride.
Yeah, cool.
The rugby, it's disused at the minute.
I think I think the Hams the Ham brothers done a great lot for Bradford. You know, they put on a good show there, and they always had good riders in the Bradford team. Bradford team was always very hard. When you went there, it was pretty daunting. Yeah.
Yeah, a big stadium as well, isn't it?
Oh yes, yeah. It was a great stadium to race in, and you know, with the banking on the corners as well, it was. Always love a track with a bit of banking. You get a flat track, it's not as exciting and the racing's not as good, but track with a bit of banking, you can have a go and there's passing and makes for good racing.
Okay then, so moving on with your fantasy meeting then, we've got the riders sorted. Who's going to be the referee, do you think?
This is not going to be the referee, and that's Frank Ebden, okay? Reason being was he was very quick on the two-minute button. Bikes would still be on the track and the 2 minutes would be on. So coming in from the race would be finished, they still wouldn't be off the track. Bang, the 2 minutes would be on. And I remember Frank getting a meeting finished in just over an hour one night. So, it was all a bit hustle and bustle with Frank. But hard to say. Modern of my era when I was riding, probably the fairest referee. Tony Still or Jim Lawrence, possibly, I think. Paul Aykroyd. Paul Aykroyd was always reasonable. So probably out of them three, I think, mate.
Yeah, Tony Steele has had a few mentions.
Yeah, I imagine he would. He's very approachable and you can talk to him and he explains himself. And at the end of the day, riders, they get excluded or get put out of a race. It can cost them a lot of money and they've got a lot of frustration to vent, you know, and Tony always approached that really well and, he was always calm and collected about it and told his side of the story to the rider. And more than not, the riders would understand where he was coming from and agree with him. So that's probably why a lot of people pick Tony, I think.
Is that the thing when you see riders getting on the phone to the referee after they've been excluded? Is that more for an explanation as to why? Because I've never seen a referee really overturn a decision?
No, and more than often you're completely wasting your time getting on the phone to a referee. But I think more than not, it is just that frustration and wanting to know why he done it to you, only if you think you were in the wrong, if you're in the right, sorry. So, it was to have it explained to you, I think it sort of calms you down a little bit. You can see it from his perspective. But, I guess that's the side of it.
Do you wish that maybe TV and things like that will be used a little bit more now to decide these things?
100%, without a doubt. I mean, if it's there and available, why not use it? Because, like I say, it can cost riders money. And if they're harshly, if they're sort of nipped at the gate and there's obvious proof that they've won the race and video replays there, you've got to use it, I think. I mean, sometimes it might be a bit poor quality and not real good, but definitely. I think, like I said earlier, you've got to move with the times, and I think video replays for referee would be a good step forward. One thing I've suggested over here in Australia, which hasn't been taken on board, is to have two referees at the meeting. You have one on the infield and one in the box. The one in the box is in control, but he's got another person or another referee to get a second opinion off, or he might, the second referee might see something that the first one didn't. There's no way in the world a referee can watch four riders spread out over four laps all at one time. So referees are going to miss things from time to time. So Yeah, I think two referees would help and video replays would help.
And I suppose there's a big difference in each track as to where the referees sat as well.
Yeah, there's some tracks too where you can't actually see the tapes very well from the referee's box, you know, and like riders touching the tapes, it could be a guess. And there's instances like that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, referees are in the worst position possible. They can't do the right thing. They can't do the wrong thing. No matter what they do is right or wrong in somebody's eyes. So it's a tough job. I admire them for what they've done. Always tried to get along with them and be as friendly as I could to all of them for obvious reasons. But no, it's there was referees you liked, referees you didn't like. That's part of the sport, you know. It's like riders, you get dished up by a rider, you put that rider in the black book and referee excludes you and it wasn't your fault. You remember that referee in the future, you know. But at the end of the day, you wouldn't have the sport if it weren't for the referees. So, yeah, it's, you know, you got to respect them at the end of the day.
On the subject of the laws of Speedway then, if you were in charge of the rule book for just a day, what would you change?
No work visas for Australian Speedway riders. I mean, Sam Masters got put out for a year. He was stuck over here and couldn't get over there. There's been other riders in the past too, you know. Work permits have created a lot of headaches for a lot of Australians over the years. I remember when I first went over, I was very lucky because my biological mother was born in the UK, so I had patriality. But I remember a rider from Queensland, Tony Rose. He hopped on a plane, flew all the way over to the UK and sat in the airport and didn't have a visa, and they put him back on the next plane and turned around and come home, and that was the end of his British career. So there's been issues in the past and there is issues now. So it's just sad in a way that we're a Commonwealth country and we've got to apply for a work permit. But they're the rules, I guess. That's what the British Home Office decide and that's how it goes.
And the final question then, we've got this meeting with the perfect lineup for your team, the perfect location. Who is going to be the opposition? And this is any complete team from history.
Well, could I pick a World Team Cup team?
Go on then.
It's only four riders I know and a reserve, so it's five. But I reckon the Australian World Team Cup team in 2001 and 2002, they were pretty shit hot.
And who was in that team?
In that team was, well, you're pushing me here, Crumpy, Todd Wiltshire, Ryan Sullivan, Jason Lyons and Lee Adams. Yeah, I would love to see that team against all the others. We might have to add a couple of other Aussie ring-ins maybe, I reckon. Maybe
you could join in.
Phil Crump and Billy Sanders would top the cake, I reckon.
Sounds like a fantastic lineup to me, and thanks for putting together your Speedway Paradise. And thanks for joining us, Shane, and giving up a bit of your evening. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much. And I hope I don't bore too many people with this podcast. Cheers.
And that is the Speedway Paradise of Shane Parker. Now, if you enjoyed that 15 minutes or so, there's another 45 minutes of Shane Parker. And that is episode 6 back from July early this year. So if you've not heard it, please do check that out because it's a great listen. Some fascinating stories. Such a character of the sport. Got up to so many antics, and you can take a listen to it. It's a nice listen. One of my favourites, I think, from this year. In fact, I think it's like picking between your kids, isn't it? And they're all my favourites, but they've all got different things about them. But Shane was a good character to be chatting to earlier this year. So please check that out. Episode 6. Don't forget to leave us a review if you don't mind. That'd be great because the thing we can do with that is we can give you a mention. We can it's like reading out you know, messages and fan mail from the olden days. So you can do that on your podcast app of choice, or indeed on the app Podchaser. You can leave a review on there, and we will find that too. So that's all got to be good. Hopefully we will speak to you before the end of the year, if not before Christmas. Fingers crossed. If not, we'll catch you in January. But thanks for all your support this year. It's been an amazing year of getting this podcast up and running, which
it wasn't really a lockdown plan. It was something I was always going to do. I won't deny that lockdown certainly helped, but it's been fantastic. And thanks to everybody who's supported the podcast in whatever way. It's really appreciated. And it's going to go from strength to strength next year. I can tell you some great things on the way on Humans of Speedway. Take care and speak soon.